Buffalo Gap is located in west central Texas, 13 miles south of Abilene. This area of the state is known for its flat land, dry, hot climate, and mesquite trees. But Buffalo Gap is different. Just south of Abilene, a few small hills rise from the otherwise flat landscape. Nestled between those hills is the little community of Buffalo Gap. Tucked away in this community is a church. And I'm not just referring to the little stone building constructed in 1938 of native rock, but people sharing life together, on a journey with one another and with God. I'm Stephen Johnson, and these are dispatches from the Trail's End, one church's story in the mission of God. I know a man who lives in a bus. These were the words that sent us into the world in the mission of God. We had heard other words sending God's people into the world, words embedded in other ancient biblical narratives, words spoken to Moses. "So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh," and then to the people Moses led out of Egypt. "See, I am sending an angel ahead of you to guard you along the way and to bring you to the place I have prepared." Words spoken by Jesus. "Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves." Words that both commissioned and empowered. "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." We knew these ancient words, and because we knew them, we were able to recognize the voice of God in our own time and place. In the moment given to us, God's sending came to us in the words, "I know a man who lives in a bus." A friend we met through community cookout, Billy Wilson, spoke them. Though from our community, Billy was an outsider to us. In other words, the way forward for us in the mission of God came from a relationship with a stranger, someone we did not know before. Billy introduced us to a man he looked in on from time to time. His name is Don. Don lives on a small piece of land out Ranch Road 1235 in an old, faded, light blue school bus. The windows are covered with curtains, or they are boarded up. There are a few broken down vehicles on the property. There's an old station wagon with New Mexico plates. His sister let him have the station wagon years ago to drive out from New Mexico. There's an old red Triumph Spitfire convertible with the top missing. Apparently, some goats climbed up and destroyed the top, but it's not in too bad of condition, and Don says it still runs. There's an old wood shed and what remains of a structure that was to be a house he began to build before his divorce. Don speaks about the bus.
It was running when I parked it here. That was 20 years ago, and I haven't tried starting it since then.
Yeah. How'd you get it?
I bought it in Dallas. See, when I bought this place, there was a small trailer and two rooms added on, sitting right here. And then about 2 years in, it burnt down to the ground. So I bought this, and we lived in this for a while. I was starting to rebuild a new house back there. Went through a nasty divorce and said, you know, that's all there is. There's no more. I gave up on that idea.
Went and found the bus.
I bought it in Dallas. Yeah. An auction in Dallas. Drove it back home. Parked it. I got a wood burning stove inside that I cook on in the wintertime. But in the summertime, that's where I cook up.
Yeah.
Got a little oven right there with my baked breads and my biscuits and whatever.
Really?
Don has built a small covering that connects to the backside of the bus, the side that faces away from the road. The outdoor wood-burning stove and oven is under the covering. It's made of concrete blocks and a grate. The covering provides shade and a nice breeze blows through. There are two old lawn chairs in the shade of that covering, one for Don and whomever happens by. Don lives alone and completely off the grid. Toward the front of the property, there's a gate, and just inside the gate, a water tank. A man from town delivers potable water now and then, fills the tank. What electricity he needs, he generates from solar panels connected to car batteries he has strung together.
That's my water tank.
Got it all set up there?
1,600 gallons.
How do you collect?
There's a man in Buffalo Gap that delivers
Oh, okay.
potable water.
Yeah.
He fills it up for me.
I see. Yeah.
Good Lord blesses us great and small every day, Steve. I've got a small solar collective system that powers, you know, it'll charge. I've got like 7 batteries, and it'll charge those batteries for me.
Yeah.
I've got like 70 watts of charging power and 3,850 amp of storage capacity. So it'll give me a couple hours of TV a day and radio the rest of my life, as long as the radio works.
Don doesn't eat much. His health won't allow it. Much of what he does eat, he grows himself.
I love to concentrate more on tubers right now, you know, like potatoes and carrots and garlic and onions.
Yeah.
You know, when it blues, let them go wild so that, you know, it'll always be there.
Yeah.
And if I need a potato, I'll just go out.
Yeah.
Go out, cook it.
Right.
Need garlic, pull up a clove of garlic. And,
You got some growing out there?
Right out here in that little pinned in area right there.
Uh huh.
I got some garlic right back over here, and I got some onions scattered out. And let them go wild. That way they'll always be there for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because they'll stay there year after year after year after year as long as you don't help them. They're going to grow more and more and more and more. Well, I always have a constant success.
Don was the first person to which we were sent when our community cookout transformed into a journey out into the lives and homes of people in Buffalo Gap. At first, he was suspicious of us. When two people from our church pulled up in front of his place in a pickup, he spotted them in the large mirror he's attached to a post. The mirror allows him to sit in the lawn chair under the covering behind the bus and see anyone who pulls up out front. Don stayed at a distance and asked, "Who's there?" Soon he made his way over to the gate, chatted briefly, and received what we had brought him. It was several months before he opened the gate, but eventually he did. Now when I stop by, he invites me around back and makes coffee on his wood-burning stove for us to share together. I gladly receive it. He's my friend.
I need to make you some coffee this morning.
Have you had any?
Well, huh? Just finished my first pot.
Oh, really?
I need to make another one. I got a system worked out here where it's almost faster than a coffee maker. Good Lord blesses us great and small every day.
He does.
There's so many people who are so wrapped up in their own rat race that they fail to recognize him.
Don scoops out some coffee and places it in the small tin coffee pot. The pot is black with soot from the fires that have fueled its percolations all these years. He snaps off pieces of dry, dead mesquite branches he has collected and stacks them neatly in a small pile on the bricks that make up his outdoor stove. He places a metal funnel he has constructed over the wood to channel the heat. On top of the funnel, he places a small grate and the coffee pot.
You see, that funnel sure helps because it just channels everything just right up.
Yeah.
There it goes. It's almost faster than a coffee maker.
Yeah.
We chat while we wait, and soon we can see the coffee begin to percolate. Don pours me a cup of coffee and hands it to me.
That's the best coffee in the town.
I believe it.
Don is not well. You can tell by looking at him. He's extremely thin and frail. His face is drawn and gaunt. He lives in chronic pain. On one occasion, when I stop by and see how Don is doing on that day, it is 9 a.m. The temperature outside is probably in the mid to upper 60s, and there's a very light breeze. Don is dressed in a winter coat with a wool hat on his head. When I ask, he tells me, they are all bad days.
Well, running out to Buffalo again. All right, come see how it works. Moving slow.
Hanging in there as best I can.
Yeah.
I'm having a pretty rough time of it.
Really? Not feeling well? I'm sorry.
That's nature of the beast.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give up.
No way. Some days better than others.
Well, they're all bad days, but yeah, some days are better than others.
Yeah. What is it? What is it? What's the problem?
I got a... Back years ago, I used to do a lot of drinking.
Uh-huh.
And I burned my pancreas out. I no longer have a pancreas.
Uh-huh.
And where my pancreas was, I've got a cyst that varies between the size of a golf ball and about the size of a softball. It'll swell up, and it'll go down, and it'll swell up, and it'll go down. And it just causes major pains for me. Yeah. Keep me from moving around and doing what I need to do.
Because of these health problems, Don is not able to eat well. He suffers from malnutrition, which really cannot be remedied by bringing him more food. He also finds it extremely difficult to ride in a car. The motion created by a vehicle causes him great pain and discomfort. He prefers to walk places. From the bus where he lives to town is about a 3-mile walk each way. He takes this walk about 3 times a week as he feels up to it. People stop to offer him a ride, but he refuses. Walking, he says, helps to manage the pain. In one sense, Don is forced by his health condition to avoid riding in cars and walk places instead, but Don has found a deeper significance to walking. They say you jog for the body and walk for the mind, he told me once. He went on to explain. When I walk, it helps to clear my mind so that I can manage the pain. And I listen to God. He's within all of us if we just listen, if we can clear our mind enough to hear Him. So I walk and clear my mind and listen to God. Don talks about how much he loves living in the quiet solitude of the country by himself. He speaks of how he doesn't have to be bothered with people. Yet there is much about his place that indicates how much he welcomes other people, like the extra lawn chair I sometimes sit in. I ask him if he needs anything, and he says, "A little time and a few kind words, I don't need much. I have what I need." In the midst of chronic pain, Don endures because he believes that God must be keeping him around for a purpose. We were sitting in the lawn chairs out behind the bus one morning when Don told me he's not entirely sure what that purpose is. But once I figure it out, he said, I'm going to give it everything I've got. I listened and thought for a moment. I suppose one way of looking at it is that I have something to offer Don. It would be easy to think of myself as his teacher. That would only be natural. I am the preacher from the church. I bring words of God. I teach at the Christian University up the road. It would only be natural. But as I take the cup of piping hot coffee Don hands me, another possibility comes clear. The wind blows gently, and we sit for a moment in the sound of the wind chimes. Voices from the radio spill out the doorway of the bus, obnoxious people on talk radio. I look at Don and say, "Well, I'll tell you what I think. For what it's worth. I think that somehow you've come into relationship with me and other people from our church. We've come to know you and you've come to know us, and I think it's because you have something to teach us. Something to teach us about how to live simply. Something to teach us about how to live a contented life. Something to teach us about how to live with hope and faith in the midst of pain. Yeah, you've got something to teach us." Don doesn't respond with words, but is clearly moved by the thought. The show of emotion is the only I've seen from him. We are entertaining the possibility that the presence and word of God might abide somewhere in the space between us, in the space where we are present enough, still enough, to listen. I know a man who lives in a bus. His name is Don. Don continues to journey with us. He makes the 45-minute walk to join us each Wednesday night when we gather for dinner and Bible study. Not long ago, on one Wednesday night, Don asked if it would be okay if he led a Bible study for a few folks from the community on a Monday night. He said he had never done anything like that before, but felt like he should do it. We gave him a key and words of blessing. In the weeks leading up to the beginning of his Monday night Bible study, I asked him what he was thinking about for his Bible study. "I think I'll begin with Job," he said. I'm Stephen Johnson, and these are dispatches from the Trail's End.